With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi, everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright, Chris Broussard. Thanks for hanging with us this morning.
Great to be here, as always.
Have a nice holiday.
See you, brother. Yes. Wonderful.
Get everything you wanted?
Well.
Both of you give everything you wanted to give?
It was a great family holiday. No pressure.
100%.
Good gifts around. The NBA gave us a tremendous day of basketball yesterday. We're going to dive right into that, starting with the marquee game on the schedule, LeBron James versus Kawhi Leonard in the battle for L.A. bragging rights. Just over 7 minutes, 7 minutes to go. LeBron hits a three to put the Lakers up seven. 2 minutes later, that lead is gone. Kawhi with a three to tie the game at 101. The Claw finished with 35-12. All right, time winding down. LeBron's game-tying three-point attempt blocked by Patrick Beverley. Watch it again. Replay shows the ball actually went off LeBron's hand. Keep in mind the King playing most of this one through an aggravated groin that he suffered in the first quarter. Clippers win the game 111-106. This is the second time they've beaten the Lakers this season. So what did LeBron think of that final play?
I didn't feel like the ball went off my hand. But, I mean, that's the way it went.
Just tried to make a play on a really great player. Went for it the first time. I kind of missed it. I don't want to hit him with his elbow, kind of reach back, and I was just fortunate to make a defensive play.
It was another road game, you know what I mean? Christmas didn't have nothing to do with it. You know, our mindset was coming in and trying to win a basketball game on the road, and we were able to do that. I mean, it's a long season. It's a marathon. So, you know, it was a great atmosphere. You know, we had a chance to win, but they made the plays.
All right, guys, we're going to talk about that groin injury to LeBron. We should keep in mind it's a different side. It was the left side of his groin, not the same one he hurt last year. But let's first start talking about the game. Did the Clippers, Nick, prove that they are the best team in L.A. after last night?
Well, they played better last night, and they had a fabulous finish. And they were down 15 early in the third quarter. We showed the highlight. When they were down 7 with around 6 minutes left, the Lakers are like 90% to win that game, and they need to win that game. They should have won that game. And Anthony Davis said it repeatedly after the game. Basically, we gave this game away. So this is a bad loss for the Lakers because they had controlled the entirety of the second half until the moments of the second half that matter the most. But despite that, do I think the Clippers are better than the Lakers? No. Now, I don't know how Broussard feels, but my guess is you similarly on this, even if you're not quite, you're a little higher on the Clippers than me, but I think these are going to be minority opinions. I think what you had in the NBA yesterday, the best team in each conference take on what most people consider to be their toughest competition in each conference.
Yes.
You had the best player in each conference outplayed by the best player on the opposition in each of those games. And folks are going to have the correct reaction, I believe, to Milwaukee-Philly, which is Giannis is still the best player out East, and Milwaukee's the best team. And people are going to wildly overreact to Lakers-Clippers because the vast majority of the basketball world has been waiting for a moment to say, told you so, Lakers ain't that good. Soft schedule, LeBron's in year 17, the real team of L.A. is the Clippers, and because of the Lakers' own errors down the stretch, because LeBron, injury or not, was not able to get to the basket yesterday and his shot was not falling, one shot shy to open the game of the worst start to a game in his NBA career. That's 0 for 8. He was 0 for 7 start yesterday's game. People are going to pounce on this. And LeBron also, you said we're going to talk about the injuries. The only player in sports not allowed to get injured. So if he's hurt, it's his fault. And so the Lakers, though, they got to own this one, Broussard, because they had this game in control throughout the second half. They led the entirety of the second half until there's about 4.5 minutes left in this game. And then they never punched back once the Clippers retook the lead. But no, I do not think the Clippers are a better team than the Lakers.
I'm with you. I'm going with the Lakers under one caveat. If LeBron is LeBron.
Yep.
In the preseason, I said The Clippers on paper look like the best team in the NBA. I said the Clippers should be the favorite, but I picked the LA Lakers to win the championship because I expected and believed LeBron would be motivated by the washed king, all that talk, wherever that was from. I don't think it was quite washed king, but he has embellished it and made it what people are saying. He's not the best player in the world. And I still think he'll be motivated by that, but he's got to be better. He hasn't, the two games against the Clippers, he hasn't been LeBron James. Now, yesterday, I'll give him the groin. But even in the first game against him, he wasn't aggressive.
It was one of his worst games of the year, his first game against
him. I can't, and yesterday, forget the numbers, forget that he took 24 shots. He wasn't LeBron James. I don't need 12 three-pointers unless it's one of those nights where he's just hot. Okay, I need him driving to the basket, being aggressive. I need him posting up when Patrick Beverly or even Paul George is on him. At least back him down, go in the paint and score. I need him pushing the ball in transition. He did none of that for the most part. But despite all that, the Lakers, because I believe LeBron will be LeBron. So when I look at other aspects of the game, you can be encouraged as a Laker fan. Their protection at the rim really bothered the Clippers. I mean, it was eye-popping how much trouble the Clippers have finishing at the rim because of the Lakers' size. Danny Green was okay. He had 6 points, but he hit a couple big shots. I thought Anthony Davis was good. Some disagree. I thought he was good. You can go to him a little more, but I thought he played well. And, you know, Kyle Kuzma stepped up and played well. Like you said, the Lakers should have won that game. And if LeBron is himself, they do win that game. So when LeBron's himself, I think they'll be better. Now, this groin injury, sit out. I think there's a report saying he may sit out one of the back, you know, one half of the back-to-back. No, sit out a week, 2 weeks, whatever it takes for you to get back to being LeBron James like you were up until a week ago when the reports were that you may have tweaked
the groin. Well, it was the rib injury against the Pacers and then the groin injury against the Bucks. And listen, in LeBron's 6 worst games of the year, the Lakers are 1-5. And they also lost the game that he sat out.
And he hasn't been good these last 3 games.
No, last 3 games, he's 25 of 63 from the field and 5 of 19 from 3. And I know we're going to talk more about the injury. I do think one of the reasons he took 12 threes was because, man, what do you do when if you're tired playing pickup basketball? Just start taking jump shots. You don't want to get to the basket. I don't think he was tired. I think he didn't have the explosion. The other element of the game, Jenna, that you mentioned in the read was the very end of the game. Now, I want to make this clear. The Lakers deserve to lose. If that call is made differently, they are still at that point, so they have the ball down three. This is not why they lost. But you can attest to this, Jenna Wolf, because you've sat across from me or next to me for the better part of the last 3 years. This is the exact scenario why I despise instant replay. We've even done a pantomime on the set of me describing this exact play, which is technically that ball went off LeBron James. For 75 years of professional basketball and 125 years since Naismith invented the damn thing in Canada or in Lawrence, Kansas, depending on who you believe, that is Lakers basketball. And through the advent of technology, the fact that this becomes Clippers basketball is not getting the call right and is not making the game better. And this is always Lakers ball. And what you will find out, and I've said this before, if you hold a basketball out in front of you and Broussard were to slap down on it, if we were to go frame by frame by frame, it almost assuredly goes off the bottom of my fingertips after it goes off you.
Right.
But for always, that's been called off the player that made the block, off the player that went for the steal. And changing that does not make the sport better. It is not why the Lakers lost. It is, but this is a pet issue of mine because instant replay continues across sports. It, in an attempt to make things better, makes things far worse.
Look, I see what you're saying. I think the best example is football. Like, a lot of people don't know what a catch is anymore, you know, and so many great catches in the past would probably not be catches today. However, I disagree with you. They got the call right because it did go off his hand. Now, I'm with you, except for 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, without this type of technology, that would have been Lakers ball. But it clearly showed when they slowed it down to the frame bare by minute, frame, right, oh, that it went off his hand. And all you said, you know, you gave the example of guys slapping the ball away and it rolls off a guy's finger, but they give it to the other team. All that means is for 75 years or whatever, they've been wrong.
Well, then, you know what?
This was the right call.
Okay, that's the right call.
Because it went off LeBron.
You said 10 years ago, 5 minutes prior in the game, that would have been Lakers ball. Because it doesn't get reviewed inside of the last 2 minutes, then they need to change the way we officiate basketball across all levels, because the vast majority of the time, a block like that is off the shooter. That's the physics of it.
I don't know that.
That's the physics of it. If it gets knocked out of my hand, it's going to go off my fingertips at the end. That's what
I didn't change it. Because it went off LeBron's fingers.
Yeah.
I mean, that was... How?
That's the wrong call.
How is it the wrong call?
Because it's not the way basketball's been played forever.
But they've
through
been
the
wrong
advent,
forever.
Through the, no, they haven't been wrong forever. Through the advent of frame by frame, that is, the spirit of that is it's off the blocking player. Hell, Mike Breen thought it was arguing, well, Beverly knocked it out. It should be off him. Of course, it should be. Again,
I agreed. I thought initially it was.
It's not why the Lakers lost. I'm not making any excuses.
It is not why the Lakers lost.
Just something to watch.
They should have won that game.
Nick, who do you like winning the NFC East?
I'll be quick here because I am so interested in Broussard's opinion on this because he's not the only person. Broussard's not.
You should mention Broussard has the Cowboys.
I didn't mean to spoil it, but Broussard thinks that the Eagles are going to lose. Well, that's the key here. I think everyone thinks Cowboys are going to beat Washington. The key is, this really isn't a question about the Cowboys. It's about, do you think the Eagles are going to beat the New York bleeping Giants? And a lot of people seem to be thinking, I'm not so sure about that. So who do I think is going to win the AFC? The Eagles. Why? Because all I got to do is beat the Giants. And to me, there is as good of a likelihood that the Giants beat the Eagles as there is that Washington beats Dallas. Like, people are once again just, well, of course Dallas is going to win, because why? Well, because they've shown to be so consistently great this year. But Philly could lose. So I've got Philly. I would be shocked if Philly loses and Dallas wins. Explain to me, my friend, and I apologize for stealing
No, it's all right. Well, it was Jenna, really.
I did it. My fault.
Quick quiz. What do I have?
A lot of money, fame.
Pink
daughters.
You know what I've got.
Integrity.
Pink integrity.
Okay, yeah.
I picked the Dallas Cowboys to win this division in the beginning of the season, and I am sticking with it. But there are some reasons, I believe. Number one, Philly's not that good. I don't think going in there and beating a dysfunctional 7-7 Dallas Cowboys team that, granted, I'm thinking is going to win the division, is reason to celebrate. Like, people acted like, okay, the Eagles are back. They've arrived. They're going to be dangerous in the playoffs. No. 3 weeks before that, they had lost to Miami. Mm-hmm. So I definitely, and then all the injuries, maybe Zach Ertz doesn't play. So that's number one. They're not that good. Number two, I think they're in for an emotional letdown. They were so hyped up for the Cowboys game. They treated it like a playoff game, which for them, it was, theoretically. Okay, they treated it like that. And then afterwards, you hear Doug Peterson talking like it was the game of the year. I mean, he's crowned Carson Wentz. He's arrived. He's getting there now. No. It was a good regular season win, but they have talked it. They are so hyped about it that I think they could have an emotional letdown. Number three, the New York Giants are actually playing pretty good football. They won two straight. I know it's Miami and Washington, but hey, those teams, Miami beat Philadelphia. Washington gave them some trouble. And these Giants a couple weeks ago took Philadelphia to overtime with Eli Manning in Philadelphia. So now Daniel Jones coming off his best game of his career. I think he's the only rookie to have a game like that, 350 yards, no interceptions, 5 TDs. He's had a couple of other 4 touchdown games, and they are going to be up for the Eagles. You know, it's not like the last game of the year, let's get the season over with.
Oh, I don't know about that part. That's the part I don't know.
You think I don't think they're thinking about Dallas. If you're thinking they don't want to help Dallas, I think they're looking at it like, look, we have a chance to spoil it for another rival.
Yeah,
because they're both rivals. We won't have a chance to spoil it for Philadelphia. So they're going to be up. pick integrity prevails, and so do the Giants.
So let me just say something about the Giants real quick, because the Giants, they've won back-to-back games, which is really impressive for a team that prior to these last two games have won two games all year. They, after winning back-to-back games earlier in the season, they then promptly went on to lose seven consecutive football games. Was it seven straight or nine straight? I forget. It was a lot of games in a row they lost. They did beat Miami, and then they just went to overtime with Washington. Washington, who beyond any belief didn't go for two at the end of that game, they ended up losing the game in overtime. I don't think Philly's great, but Philly is, in my estimation, they understand what is in front of them. And what is in front of them is the same thing that was in front of them in the Dallas game, which is win this game and we go to the playoffs. For them to do what they did against Dallas defensively, which has been, to me, the weakest point of this team, because offense, we can talk about, we can use, I don't want to say even the excuse, the explanation of injuries, right?
Right.
Philly's offense has really, that passing attack's been ruined by injuries, and Wentz has turned the ball over too much. Defensively, against an offense that's been putting up points on everybody this year in the Cowboys offense, they held them out of the end zone. And now you're going.
You overstated the Cowboys' offense a little bit.
Okay, well, an offense that's top five in points and top five in yards going into the game. An offense that throughout the season, aside from the monsoon against New England, has been able to move the football.
New Orleans couldn't score.
New Orleans, you know what? That's a good point. New Orleans early in the year in the game, Drew Brees didn't play. Totally fair point. But throughout the course of the year, this was one of the Cowboys' least potent offensive days, and it was their most important day of the year. I just don't see Philly responding to that by gagging a game away against the Giants. Philly could not have played worse against the Giants 3 weeks ago, and they won. Like, that game, they let Eli all of a sudden look like it was, I don't even know what year that would have been, 2011 for Eli Manning?
For a
first half. Their offense was absolutely unconscious in a bad way for two and a half quarters, and they still won that football.
Isn't there something to be said for the fact right now the Eagles, arguably the first time all season, are actually playing as a team? They kind of are all on the same page. And the Cowboys, who we will talk about a little bit later, seem a little fractured. Like, Jason Garrett has clearly lost that locker room. They're coming off a terrible loss. They don't know who the real leader is. Is there something to emotion and momentum that can actually drive the Eagles?
I don't think the Eagles are playing that great. I think it was one game. I mean, like I said, a few weeks ago, they lost to Miami. Then they, you know, the Giants took
Carson's
overtime.
Carson's had three great
Carson
games.
Carson has played well. But these guys that he's throwing the ball to, handing the ball to, they've played maybe above their heads. Are they going to continue to do that? They had something to prove. We belong in this league. We can play in this league. Do they relax a bit now that they've kind of proven that? Now that people, even their coach has said, you know, look, you guys are playing great. So I just think that they could be in for a letdown.
The
Giants would be on a high.
The perfect ending to the NFC season would be if Philly does lose to the Giants, but Dallas also loses to Washington, and Philly gets in by default. That's the way this pillow fight of a division should end.
I liked it until the last part.
Yeah, it's both teams, like, all of a sudden.
Nick, you have said this entire season that the Eagles only function when they have, like, some sort of theme pushing them, that Doug Peterson has been looking for something, whether it's the underdogs or whatever it is. They got no pass catchers left on their team that are healthy. They're sort of limping their way to the postseason, but somehow maybe it is emotional or momentum or something.
Dallas could lose to Washington.
No.
They didn't even talk about.
No.
Oh, no, it's
not
impossible.
Even possible.
Not the 7-8 Dallas
Cowboys.
What'd
you say? They got the playoffs in front of them.
The Lakers, they have lost more than just the game last night to the Clippers. LeBron James aggravated a groin injury in the first quarter. And according to reports, some in the organization are encouraging the King to take the injury seriously, meaning take some time off to fully heal. In case you forgot, LeBron also suffered a groin injury on Christmas Day last season on the other side, which sent the Lakers season into a tailspin. Nick, terrible coincidence. How concerning is this injury?
It's concerning. Just real quick, just a moment ago, because I don't want people to kill Broussard. I said Giannis took seven threes, and you said he was great. Embiid is who you were saying there. I don't want people to clip Broussard saying Giannis was unbelievable on Christmas and send it to us. To answer your question, Jenna Wolf, how concerning is this injury? Well, it's massively concerning if they allow it and LeBron allows it to get worse and deteriorate. And this is where The two groin injuries on Christmas Day, you know, 1 year apart, it's obviously, as you mentioned, an odd coincidence. It's an unfortunate one. This is nowhere near the issue the one last year was. Last year was the first significant injury of his career. This is a little nagging thing that NBA guys, LeBron included, always have throughout the course of a season, over the course of a couple seasons, but it must be addressed. And this is where you need some of those adults in the room, Frank Vogel and his very veteran coaching staff, to pull LeBron aside and say, man, I know you've boxed yourself in a bit with the load management comments, and you are going to be opening yourself up to criticism if we sit you. But you said it, I play if I'm healthy. Right now, he's clearly not 100% healthy. Do not worry about any of the noise. And LeBron's been a great player as far as ignoring the noise, certainly over the latter half of his career, after I think it did bother him in the first half of his career. The only way this Lakers season goes sideways is if at the end of it, LeBron or Anthony Davis are not there in full force. And this is where, while I don't think year 17, it turns 35 in 4 days, that stuff matters that much when it comes to the greatest athlete ever. Where it does matter to everyone is this: how quickly you recover from these nagging tweaks, sprains, and pulls. So if the Lakers lose, I mean, go from 4 losses in a row to 6 losses in a row, you deal with it. If it means you get the healthy LeBron that you had the first 25 games of the year. Because when this team was 24-3 and LeBron was a top three MVP candidate, no one was doubting how good they could be. It's since he suffered the rib injury and now the groin injury that the Jackals are out waiting for the moment they've been waiting on all year. It's not a shock that the Lakers losing streak coincides with LeBron getting dinged up.
Do you think, because again, the reports have been that he might sit out one half of the upcoming back-to-back. Do you like that, or would you say sit him?
It depends on how significant it is.
Right.
I would say you can have the next 2 games off because he has the rib and the groin.
Right.
I would tell him you can sit both the games of the back to back.
Look, I love that LeBron and AD are respecting the regular season. I love that they're playing, especially AD, because AD playing through all these little nagging injuries shows the impact of LeBron James on him. Because I'm convinced if AD was in New Orleans, he would have been sitting out plenty of these games with these little injuries that he's always sat out with. So I respect that. I love it. You want to play 78, 82, whatever it is. But be smart. Somebody in that Lakers organization, as you said, Rob Pelinka, Frank Vogel, Lionel Hollins, Jason Kidd, heck, Maverick Carter or Rich Paul, sit down with LeBron and say, look, this season is about you winning the championship. And I don't even think he should catch flack if he sits out, say, the next 2 or 3 games from the people that's, oh, you were talking about load management. That's not load management. That is you are injured and you want to get fully healthy.
But you know he will. Whether he should or not, he will, and
he'll
has to not care about it, of course.
If people think it's not an injury. But here's the thing. The last 3 games, LeBron's not been good. His numbers have been great, which is a testament to how good he is. But still, he has not been himself against Indiana, against Milwaukee, or against the Clippers. That LeBron James is not going to get the Lakers over the hump. If LeBron's playing like that, they won't beat the Clippers. They won't win the championship.
Correct.
He needs to get healthy. We saw last year, he came back what now in hindsight appears to be early. And he wasn't the same. They were losing to Memphis, Atlanta. LeBron needs to get healthy. He shouldn't need somebody to tell him. But if he does, then he's got to live.
And you saw, again, even the most ardent LeBron James doubter, if you've watched him throughout the year, he's been a different player since midway through the Indiana game, just flatly.
Yep.
And yesterday took 12 threes. Missed the most threes he's ever missed in a game in his career.
Was really
Why?
Settling.
Because he didn't have the burst to get to the basket. It wasn't the rib injury. It was the groin injury. And so the LeBron's the only athlete I've ever seen that everyone immediately discounts no matter what the past performance is. Not from 5 years ago, but from 3 weeks ago when it was like, my God, he's the league MVP, and now it is. See, you know, he's shooting 39% from the field in the last 3 games. There's a reason. It's because he's dinged up, and I agree with you 1,000%. And there is a difference between load managing a knee condition to where you miss a quarter of the games and suffering an injury and missing a game or two after that. No one has argued. I haven't seen anyone, and I might have been the hardest person of anybody on the load management stuff, that guys should have to play through injuries. Nobody is arguing that. It's how much maintenance you should do to prevent injuries during the season that creates
some of the issues. But we just applauded Dak Prescott because he's gone out there and he's a good leader for playing through his injury.
Because it's a 16-game season. They're football players.
And he's only
players,
got one, basically and, one game
football,
left.
That's just part of the game.
And by the way, if this were to be clear, if this were the playoffs, I don't think Bruce Arter I would be saying he sits.
Right.
If it's the playoffs exactly. and the Cowboys are in a playoff situation, right. You got
to
play.
Or they had to win this next game to make the playoffs.
Exactly.
All right. The Cowboys came into the season with Super Bowl aspirations, but heading into Week 17, they've had to downgrade to playoff desperation in order to even get to the postseason. Dallas has to take care of Washington and hope that the Eagles lose to the Giants. After last week's loss, Cowboys Pro Bowler DeMarcus Lawrence said, quote, talent without direction is nothing at all. Broussard, what was your reaction to what DeMarcus had to say?
He was telling it like it is. I mean, that's all there is to it. I know he walked it back a little the next day, but he meant what he said. They are greatly talented, but they lack direction. And look, Mark Schlereth, our colleague here at Fox, has been doing, recently he's been talking about doing a great job with this. You need a healthy fear of your head coach. The Patriots have a healthy fear of Bill Belichick. The Spurs have a healthy fear of Greg Popovich. You need that to permeate your culture. And in Dallas, that can't be the case because Jerry Jones has neutered Jason Garrett. Because players know, certainly the superstar players, I can go around Jason and go straight to Jerry if I really need to talk to about something. If I really have a problem with Jason, I can go to Jerry and talk to him about it. That takes away the authority of the head coach. And to be honest, Jason kind of said the same thing when he kind of tried to throw Kellen Moore under the bus. He said himself that, well, when that 4th-and-8 play, when Amari Cooper and Randall Cobb aren't out there, well, Kellen Moore has the final authority, ultimately. That's neutering yourself. That's showing you're not, as the head coach, providing direction, okay? By making that comment, you implied that you thought you should have got one or both of those guys out there, but why didn't you do it? Why didn't you give direction? Finally, I'll say this, Nick. Dez Bryant, now I know he's not the greatest source or whatever, but he comes out on Twitter and he has said that Jason Garrett can't relate to black players. He's liked tweets saying Jason Garrett wasted his prime. Now, who is Dez talking to? He's going off his own experience, but he is talking to people in that locker room. He's got friends. He's got boys that are still on that team, and he is probably saying and tweeting what he's hearing from them.
Even if he has an axe to grind, or even if he comes at it from a place of an agenda, it's an informed agenda, if you will. This might be a fair criticism. In fact, I think it is a fair criticism of Jason Garrett. DeMarcus Lawrence is the single worst messenger possible for it. And DeMarcus Lawrence has gotten a total pass the last half of the year as the Cowboys have fallen apart. Cowboys were 5-3 once upon a time. In those 7 games since then, the highest paid player in the history of the Dallas Cowboys has not 1 sack, but half a sack. I can't do a half with my hands, but you're 1/2. He has been a non-factor. We talk about Zeke's contract. We talk about the contract Dak hasn't gotten yet. We talk about the Jason Garrett's lack of a contract extension. Talk about all these guys. DeMarcus Lawrence, who should be noted, and by the way, I understand why he did it, but after being franchise tagged, waited to have his shoulder surgery until he had his new contract, which I supported at the time, and I understand why he did it. But when you do that, and you know you're potentially going to have missed the beginning of the season or start off as missed the first game, as I think it was, then the idea is you're going to ramp it up at the end. During that Eagles game, their biggest game of the year, it's a great job by our colleague Joe Buck, and Joe and Troy were talking about DeMarcus Lawrence, about how he hasn't made a play, right, and he actually got a quarterback hit, and it's like, oh, there's DeMarcus Lawrence. And talent without direction, that might be the case for the offense, for the schematics. You are a pass rusher, man. Your job is the most straightforward of any job in football. A attack the quarterback. As we used to be told, Bill Parcells used to say, sit or sic him. Sit there and then go. And the fact that DeMarcus Lawrence has not held up his end of the bargain on that, I would feel better about this commentary if it was coming from a player who it feels more earnest from than a player who's the highest paid player in the history of the team who has underachieved this year.
Just quickly before we break, it clearly sounds like Jason Garrett has lost this locker room. If they somehow do make the playoffs like you think they will, can you get it back? Can you win a locker room back once you've really lost them?
The players just have to play for pride. I mean, I don't think they're going to do much in the playoffs once they get there, but I think they got enough pride to try to.
And they know they'd be backing in. They'd be getting in because Philly lost.
Back here, first things first, joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook. Brian went all out on Instagram for the family holiday picture this year.
Yes.
Color coordinated,
yes.
Fashion coordinated, the tree was gigantic. It was really a lovely picture.
Wife makes me do all of that.
I have no doubt,
that's just how marriage goes.
Looks like you guys had a wonderful Christmas. You got a bunch of small children, which makes Christmas all the better.
Running around all day long. Made a couple trips to CVS to get batteries.
That was my.
There you go.
That was me.
Yep. I was there. A bunch of batteries. We need 4 more batteries, so.
I'm out.
There it is.
I was the battery.
Brian actually went. Jenna sent one of the many people that prefer to see me.
That is not what Jenna did. That is not what Jenna did. I said Brian.
Listen, she gave him half a day off on Christmas.
No, I didn't.
That's, I mean, that was
terrible, what you're saying. Brian, let's talk about the Seahawks, who on Sunday lost starting running back Chris Carson and backup running back C.J. Procise to season-ending injuries. So that opened the door for 33-year-old Marshawn Lynch to return to his former team. Lynch, who last played for Seattle back in 2015, met with the media on Tuesday. Take a listen to this. Yep.
What brought you back this time?
Happy holidays. Merry New Year. Y'all have a great day. It's a great feeling to be back. Thank you.
So nothing's changed as far as press conferences, although he smiles a little bit more. Brian, you think Lynch will have a real impact as the Seahawks attempt to make a Super Bowl run?
Well, I don't know that he's going to have the impact that he once had as far as his ability on the field. But the biggest thing that he's going to bring back to this locker room is attitude. And that's what this thing in Seattle was built on. You remember the Legion of Boom. You remember what happened with the offense just trying to play bully ball and run through people. That was started by Marshawn Lynch because he brought the attitude. He brought that passion. And so he brings that back to an offense that really with Chris Carson, you had that same type of thing, a running back that was willing to run through a wall for this football team, a running game that defenses had to respect, third best in the league. And the other part to that that I love is that when you have that type of running game, it allows Russell Wilson to do the things that he does best, play fakes and then throw the ball deep. That allows Lockett to get involved in the game. That allows Metcalf to get involved in the game. And Marshawn brings that to this table. The other thing that brings is pass blocking ability. Rashad Penny, who got hurt a couple weeks ago, he just wasn't very good in pass blocking. Marshawn Lynch is very good at pass protection. And the last time they played the 49ers, like they'll play this week, the 49ers had 5 sacks. So he will help protect the quarterback. I think he brings all those things. The biggest question is impact on the field. Will he be game ready? It's just hard to tell. It's hard to think that you've been off for a complete season and you're coming back and you're ready to play a football game. But he's going to bring that passion, that attitude, and maybe that's the edge that the Seahawks need.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to help in the locker room. As you said, the attitude. Also, he's a connection to the glory years, where the Super Bowl and all that. So I think all that's great. And also, if you look at his last 2 years in Oakland, where they weren't typical Marshawn Lynch years. However, he averaged 4.2 yards a carry. That's right around his career average of 4.3, and better than some of his years when he averaged below 4 yards a carry. So that would tell you that, you know, a lot of guys, when they retire as running backs, you can see it in their yards per carry just dropping drastically. That's not the case with him. Maybe the rest did his body good. He's only 33, which I know that's old for a running back. But, you know, some guys are playing a little longer. We saw C.J. Anderson. I know it wasn't the same situation he had been with Carolina, but he had been cut. He goes to the Rams and plays well. And as you said, their offensive line, obviously they give up a lot of sacks. Yeah. But they can run block. You know, Chris Carson and Rashad Penny had great success. So I think there'll be holes for Lynch to run through. So
I'm going to say he'll have a pretty decent impact on that team.
Here's where I think Marshawn Lynch is going to have the biggest impact, because I don't think he's going to be great. And I love Marshawn. I think he's one of the most interesting people in sports, and the dichotomy between how he feels talking to the media and how he feels talking to people he's comfortable with, I think is really fascinating. And
I think he's been a beat writer.
I get that part of it. I've never been the one having to ask him the questions. But the reason I think it's going to be good for Seattle potentially is I think it's going to force them out of this archaic offense they've been running the last few years, which is use Russell Wilson in case of emergency instead of use Russell Wilson like he's Russell bleeping Wilson. Mm-hmm. Last year, they lost the playoff game to the Cowboys because they were so insistent on staying committed to the run, even though every time Russell Wilson dropped back, they got around 9 yards per play, and every time they ran the football, they got around 3 or fewer yards per play. The Seahawks have overachieved to their talent this year. Now, I was higher on them than most. I had them winning the division going into this season. But if you look at their point differential compared to their win-loss record, they do not line up. They have a gaudy win-loss record despite not having blown out anyone this year except for the one game against the Cardinals, and they went and promptly lost to the Cardinals second time around. They are escaping through great Russell Wilson plays at the end of games, other teams making mistakes at the end of games. The only way that they're going to be able to go on a real playoff run is if they are forced into, because Pete Carroll doesn't want to do it, the coordinator up there doesn't want to do it, as far as, you know what, Russell, you're one of the three best people in the entire world at what you do. Drop back 40 times and make magic happen. Now, you might say that's not Seattle Seahawks football. Correct. But if they are going to beat more talented teams, it's going to be not because Marshawn Lynch all of a sudden, to me, looks like 2014. It's going to be because you don't have Chris Carson, you don't have Rashad Penny, you don't have CJ ProSize, and you have no choice but to say, you know what? Russell, make magic happen. That, to me, is the bigger story here, that we wouldn't be talking about Seattle adding a running back if it was anyone other than this guy right here, because you're adding a replacement-level player at this point in the season. Now, maybe he'll be brilliant, and that'd be a cool story as well, but I think the story of this is, does it make them use their best player the way they should have been using their best player the last couple of years?
They had the option of doing that all season long, but their run game had been that good because their offensive line had blocked well enough. I think, and so I do agree with you, they're going to have to score some points here. They're going to have to put up 24, 27 points a game. Russell Wilson certainly has the ability to do that. But I also believe that Marshawn gives you that 3rd-and-1, hand the ball off to 24, let him go ahead and get those yards. He gives you those attitude plays, which make a difference in the game. It makes a difference on the sideline and in the locker room. They also know that a guy, and to your point, he's a throwback to the past. He's a guy that has been there and done that, has been a Super Bowl champion. He certainly would have been another Super Bowl champion if they would have handed him the football. And so when I look at Marshawn, it's much more than just what Russell Wilson is going to do. It's about the attitude, the collective attitude for the team.
But do you think they're going to go further because of Marshawn Lynch? Does anyone here think the Seattle Seahawks are a better team this year because of adding him?
I don't think so. I don't think they're a better team. I think Chris Carson probably fit their offense
a little
the best.
Bit better.
But, I mean, you don't know what you're going to get from Marshawn. The good thing for Marshawn Lynch is that he wasn't built, as far as his career-wise, especially on speed. It wasn't, because as you get older, you lose your speed. He was built on running people
over, toughness,
aggressive running, and that's something, that's an attitude. Right. That's something that could come back with you no matter what age you are. If his speed comes back just a little bit in the next couple weeks, that gives this Seattle offense an advantage.
And the last blocking point you two made is a really, really important one, that they actually might have an upgrade there as opposed to, even if it's a downgrade in the actual rush.
The Eagles are just one win away from the playoffs after taking down the Cowboys last week. But Philly has been ravaged by injuries to the receiving corps and the O-line. And now Carson Wentz's top target, Zach Ertz, is questionable Sunday against the Giants with a rib injury that he suffered last week. Head coach Doug Peterson knows the challenge ahead. Take a listen.
I think the guys really respond, obviously, to adversity. I just keep it as honest, keep it as transparent as I can with the guys. And I'll say, guys, this is where we're at. You know, this is who we are. Let's embrace it. You know, let's just spend each day getting better and just focus on today. And that's kind of been the messaging here down the stretch. And you know, kind of whatever happens, happens.
Brian, it's actually amazing that this team has gotten as far as it has without anyone for Carson Wentz to really throw the ball to. How have they done it? How are they in this position now?
I think you got to start with Doug Peterson, and I've been pretty hard on Doug throughout the season because I thought his team at points was underachieving. But at this point, when you have all the injuries that they have, especially on the offensive side of the ball, it takes someone strong at the helm to keep that team together. And I think Doug has done a great job of saying, hey, we lost one guy, somebody else has to step up. We lost another guy, somebody else has to step up. And not only step up, we have to play better despite that guy being gone. Doug Peterson has galvanized his football team with his leadership ability. He's been called a player's coach, but at this point, the players are responding to him. I think the second part is Carson Wentz has just played better in the last two games. And so when you look at the game against the Cowboys, he played four quarters of excellent football. The two games before that, Washington and the Giants, he played two quarters, but it was the second half of both of those games of excellent football. You have to have a quarterback, like Coach Mangini always says, as an elevator, a guy that can be a force multiplier, and that's what Carson Wentz has been. He made those guys who are subpar, free agent type of guys look much better than they actually are, and that's why you pay that guy. That's why you pay Carson Wentz to be one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL, because he can make everybody else better. That's what happened to this football team.
And to be fair, how are the Carson Wentz and the Eagles on the verge of clinching the NFC East despite all the injuries? That's what it says on the screen. Because they're in the NFC East.
Right.
Another team with very high expectations, at least by some, going into the year that has had their very fair share of injuries is the Rams. The Rams responded to those injuries by their quarterback regressing a bit, turning the ball over too much, and them struggling throughout the year all the way to 8-7 and eliminated. The Eagles have had their quarterback regress a bit, turn the ball over a little bit too much, all the injuries, all the way to 8-7, and winning, you're in. Clinched. So a lot of it is circumstantial, but where I will give Carson Wentz the most credit is exactly what you talked about at the end there. Fourth quarter against the Giants, shouldn't have been in that position, but you were. And he was exceptional. Fourth quarter against Washington, he played, the offense played well enough in that game. That was not about the offense not holding up its end of the bargain. Similar to the Miami game, by the way, when the offense played well enough and the defense fell apart. Carson Wentz was exceptional. And the entire game against the Cowboys, I know they didn't score a whole bunch of points, but that was the best game he's played all year. Highest completion percentage, most yards per attempt, second most passing yards, one of his four games this year with a passer rating above 100. He was great in that game as you saw guys falling by the wayside. Now he's going to have to do it again against the Giants, potentially without Zach Ertz. And you can, if Zach Ertz can go, how much will the rib injury hamper him?
Like, I've broken my ribs. I've broken my cartilage. And from the running back perspective, I couldn't go. I couldn't put myself in a position every single play. And I think Zach Ertz, similarly, will be put in the same situation. Catching the football and being tackled by guys that are a little bit smaller than you still is damaging to the ribs. Just remember, when you have a rib injury, you can't laugh, you can't cough, you can't sleep very well. All those things affect your ability to go out there and prepare yourself throughout the week and play on Sunday. It's going to be hard for Zach to be helpful in this football game.
I want to know I want you to respond to this. I think one of the reasons Carson, and I want to give him credit because you're right, he's carried guys who are, you know, end of the bench type players, third and fourth stringers. But I think part of that is that a lot of the guys who are hurt were veterans. We know there are reports out about the locker room being divided about Carson and that he's not, you know, the leader we need and so on and so forth. And a lot of those guys had more favorable experiences with Nick Foles. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they're out, they're injured. These guys coming in, they're not thinking any of that. They're thinking, I want to show either the Eagles or some other team in the NFL that I can play, that I belong in this league, that I can actually play in this league. So I think that has helped Carson be a better leader, that these guys, I think, are all ears. Is there some truth to that, do you think?
I think there's a bunch of truth to it. And I said it a couple of weeks, and I kind of compared it to the Russell Wilson situation that happened in Seattle a few years back. It was the Legion of Boom. It was Marshawn Lynch. They were the leaders of that football team. And Russell Wilson just naturally kind of played the backup role. But as Pete Carroll got rid of those guys, now Russell Wilson got elevated to the leader of that football team. And that team has taken off just a bit. Same thing with Carson Wentz. Of course, Alshon being there, a veteran. Nelson Aguilar, not as an established player, but he's been there a little bit longer than Carson. Those guys were just kind of out on their own. They're veterans. They're doing their own thing. They didn't look at Carson as the leader of this football team. Really, in most aspects, he was a golden child, given a whole bunch, but hasn't produced very much. But Carson Wentz, over the last couple weeks, with these younger guys that look up to him as a leader, has become much more productive. perspective. And I think a lot of the guys on the team are now saying he is the leader of this football team. Lastly, I think when you talk about why has this team persevered through some of these injuries, Miles Sanders, the running back out of Penn State, over the last couple weeks, he's had three of the last four games over 22 touches per game. He has just been one of the most explosive weapons in the NFL these last couple weeks. That running game and his ability in the screen game has helped this football team be much better.
And even with the injuries, I think Philadelphia is going to be able to move the football because the Giants, guys are running wide open on the Giants all year long. The Giants defense, we talk about Daniel Jones and his fumbles and the quarterback situation there. Saquon dealing with the injury and then having the monster game last week. The Giants defense is the biggest reason that they have been a terrible team throughout the year. Even in their win this past week against Washington, you did let Washington score 35 on you despite playing multiple quarterbacks. And Haskins was playing one of the best games of his very young career until he got hurt. So the question to me is, if the Eagles lose, if you're right, if they lose, I don't think it's going to be because the offense is held down. I think it's going to be because this Eagles defense, once again, on the road, no shows. The Eagles defense been one team at home, one team on the road. They're allowing fewer than 17 points a game at home. They're allowing 28 points per game on the road. The Cowboys game in Dallas. Dallas hangs 37 on them. The Cowboys game in Philly. Dallas doesn't score a touchdown. I understand it's different times of the season. Can this Giants defense, against a quarterback that's coming off the best game of his career in Daniel Jones, can this Eagles defense? Pardon me. Can this Eagles defense step up just a bit? To me, that's the way the Eagles lose if they lose, is that the defense, all of a sudden, you have New York Giants running wide open throughout the game. I don't think it's going to be because, even without Zach Ertz, you can't move the football, because everyone can move the football on the New York Giants.
You guys have a lot of confidence in that Eagles offense. A lot of confidence. There's nobody that I even know or recognize on that team, right? Especially if Zach Ertz doesn't play. Broussard, has Kawhi proven he is the best player in Los Angeles?
No, because a week ago, it was clearly LeBron James. And Kawhi is great, but LeBron was playing like the best player in the world. Not the MVP. Giannis is the clear front runner for that, I believe, because he doesn't have the help and Anthony Davis that LeBron has. But LeBron was playing tremendous basketball. So I think he's still the best player in LA when healthy. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt yesterday. I was watching that game and I'm like, why aren't you being more aggressive? My father was watching it with me and nobody's a bigger LeBron fan than him. And he's yelling at the TV. You might be a slightly, but he's yelling at the TV, take it to the basket. Don't settle for the three. What are you doing? So I thought LeBron was unusually tentative. I know he took 24 shots. I don't care. He wasn't himself, and that's what he needs to be the best player in LA and to lead the Lakers to the championship. And I want you, I know you're going to say LeBron, obviously, because I think Kawhi's praises need to be sung because it is much closer than you think, Nick. Like, I think there are three guys on the top tier right now, the NBA. Giannis, LeBron, and Kawhi. Harden. Kawhi. Oh. Kawhi is the truth. Now, Harden and Luka are just a smidge, not a dash, not a hint, a smidge below those two, all right? But Kawhi Leonard, I don't know why you're so down on me. The boy is bad. And if LeBron slips up a little, Giannis then Kawhi will pass him.
Okay. So
I want to listen to you, and then I'm going to talk a little more about that.
No. So LeBron was clearly not the best player yesterday. And when they first matched up against each other, first game of the year, he was clearly not the better player that night. Everyone can acknowledge that. Who's the better player? Of course it's LeBron, and it's for what you said. I know we have no long-term memory in this country anymore. But can we remember a week ago? Let's not talk about the accomplishments. The four MVPs to zero.
It's not lifetime.
It's not about that. It's about who would you rather have right now. 96 hours ago, this would have been unanimous, even by the most ardent LeBron James critics. Who's been better this year? The guy who, up until 96 hours ago, had played every game this year, whose team was the number one seed in the West, which they still are, by the way, and who, if he wasn't the MVP, was certainly top three. It wasn't even a question. Now, Kawhi yesterday was better. Kawhi was sensational shooting the basketball. He played, by his standards, incredibly heavy minutes. Kawhi almost played 38 minutes, which hopefully we see him before the new year, but I don't know if we will after that. And so credit to Kawhi. And he did spend some time doing what he used to do, guarding the opposing team's best player.
AD and LeBron.
Absolutely right. Kawhi was great yesterday. But you say I'm down on him. And the reason that I don't put him on the level of LeBron or Giannis or Harden is because I cannot get past the fact of how much easier his job is because he only has to do it 3 out of 4 games. How good would these other guys look if they got the not only minutes restriction, but also the games restriction that Kawhi has? Like, you could, when I first got hired by Fox, really my only job was to go on Colin Cowherd's show twice a week for 15 minutes. And those segments always did pretty relatively well. And I used to joke with the bosses. I was like, you guys are only asking me to be good for 30 minutes a week. I was like, I got to be able to do that. It's not that extreme, but what these other guys are being asked to do compared to what Kawhi is doing is different. So that's why it's not
I will give you that.
And so if you tell me I'm going to get LeBron's A game and Kawhi's A game, it is close. I concede that point. But I am so much more regularly getting LeBron's A game compared to Kawhi's DNP game that he removes himself from the discussion, even though in the two head-to-head matchups this year, he's been better. And I interrupted you. You wanted to say something else?
No, I agree with you. Like, I've kind of taken Kawhi. After last year's playoffs, I thought Kawhi Leonard had earned the right with LeBron James about to be 35, coming off injury, 17th year, you're thinking he's going to fall off. The way Kawhi outplayed Giannis in the playoffs, I thought Kawhi had earned the right to be called the best player in the world. And we'd see if he holds up his end of the bargain this year. I'm with you on the load management. It bothers me. And I think that you kind of disqualify yourself from that, you know, title as best player in the world. He could pick it up in the playoffs, though. But let me ask you this. When he plays, like, is that your only... My only knock against Kawhi really is the load management. Because when he plays, he is definitely with Giannis and LeBron. You wouldn't give him that?
So when he plays, I think that games like yesterday, he looks like as good as anybody in the league. No question about it. Because of his lack of playmaking. And people can say, oh, it's gotten better.
He has
and it's gotten better. But that's because it's gone from a D to a B minus. Like, it's
fair.
Right?
Fair.
He is no longer a...
Maybe a B, but fair.
Right. He's no longer a below average playmaker. I will give him credit. And he had the one really nice shot fake pocket pass last night to generate a layup. And so his playmaking, to me, the lack of it, compared to not only LeBron and Harden, but also Giannis, who is a better playmaker than Kawhi, generates more open threes than Kawhi, and has more on his shoulders than Kawhi. That plus the fact everyone loves his mid-range game. The problem with the mid-range game is, because it's the least efficient shot in the game, it's why he's shooting 45% on the season. It's why that his offensive efficiency numbers aren't quite what they otherwise could be, because you said a few days ago, LeBron doesn't have a go-to move.
Right.
But he does. It's getting to the basket.
Yeah, but he's not a great free throw shooter. So that, like, even yesterday, he made 1 of 2
Late in the game, made 1 of 2, 3 of 4 for the game. Kawhi's go-to move is to generate the least efficient shot in the game. And so even if you're the best in the game at that, I'd rather have Harden's offensive game. I'd rather have Giannis's all-around game. And obviously, when they're averaging the same amount of points, one guy plays LeBron versus Kawhi, and the other guy leads the league in assists, and Kawhi is stuck on one career double-digit assist game. To me, it's pretty clear.
Kawhi is much better. I mean, LeBron has the statistical edge. There's no question about that. I put Kawhi over Harden because defensively, he's one of the best guys in the league. Defensively, Harden obviously isn't. But Kawhi, you talked about he's a mid-range assassin. He's not taking when they need a bucket, Kawhi knows, get to my spot. And that spot isn't 22 feet. It isn't 19 feet. It isn't 17. It's like 10, 12 feet from the basket. And he hits it at a high rate. That dude, I'm telling you, man, he hasn't lost a playoff series since 2017. I know that's partially because of injury. But he is a winner. He gets it done on both ends of the floor. He doesn't, you know, waste dribbles or anything like that.
And everything they've done this year is saying the regular season doesn't matter, and they played great yesterday, and it's all about the postseason. And if they win the title, because they put all their eggs in that basket, then I just got to eat it. that I listen, if the Patriots win the title this year, I got to eat it. If the Clippers win the title this year, I got to eat it.
You know what's going to happen? You'll turn into Ben Roethlisberger.
Okay, there you go.
You'll be eating a lot.
All right, so we'll see. The smartest bet in sports over the last 15 years has been bet on 23. For the Lakers or the Heat or the Cavs or I guess six.
To win it? To get there.
To be the best player in the league in the final game of the year. It's been the best bet in sports. I'll bet it again.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.